Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
I'm your host, Mark Levin, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Hello to my Facebook audience. Hello to radio stations across the nation. Hello to progressive voices. Today was a day that will live in infamy. Those words were first expressed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Today, in response to the Russian attack on our elections, Donald Trump said, "Hey, great, do it again," or words to that effect. I'd like to imagine that Donald Trump was president on December 7th, 1941. I think he would say something like this. Am I going to condemn the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor? You know, mistakes were made on all sides. U.S. made some, Japan made some, and Japan, the emperor, whom I just met with and who said really nice things about me, by the way, emphatically denies that they attacked Pearl Harbor. So even though all our intelligence agencies say they did, even though we have ships that have been sunk, I don't really know who to believe. I'm just going to have to take the Japanese emperor at his word that he didn't attack Pearl Harbor. We won't be doing sanctions against the Empire of Japan. And, oh, by the way, England. Yeah, Nazi Germany can have England. We won't be sanctioning or do anything about that either. America first. Oh, and the emperor gave me a nice soccer ball. You know, it's worth mentioning and reporting and thinking about the fact that on September 11th, 2001, only 3,000 Americans or so were murdered. But our democratic process was not in danger. It wasn't a threat to our Constitution, to our form of government. There was no coup, no attempt to overturn our national leadership. It was a brutal massacre, to be sure. But people took the 9/11 threat seriously. December 7th, 1941, as brutal as the Japanese attack was on Pearl Harbor, again, it wasn't a threat to our system of government. It wasn't an attack on our democracy. This was. Vladimir Putin admitted today that he wanted Donald Trump to become president of the United States. And, well, all our intelligence agencies and even the Senate Intelligence Committee, which includes Republicans, by the way, they actually control the committee. They all know, they all say, they all have strong evidence that Russia attacked the United States. Only this attack, this cyber attack, while not directly leading to anyone's deaths, was, I would argue, a much more severe threat. It was a threat to our system of government. It was a threat to our democracy. It was a threat to our republic. And Donald Trump effectively told them today, "Hey, I'm going to need your help in 2018. You see, I control only a minority of Americans. Only a minority of Americans are stupid enough, ignorant enough, racist enough to believe the 7, 8, 9, 10 public lies that I give every single day. It's hard to believe them because they contradict each other, and I contradict myself. But, you know, a true pre-fascist would believe everything I say. And I do have a number of them in America. They're just not the majority. And I'm getting nervous because I think they're going to vote in 2018 to vote for the Democratic Party, which believes in democracy, rather than the Republican Party, which believes and supports totalitarian fascism. And if that sounds like an extreme thing to say about the Republican Party, ask yourself who, other than John McCain, war hero who's dying, who under other than Jeff Flake or Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, who are leaving government, who dares raise any concerns about a president who not only attacks our free press and indeed encourages violence, but also someone who is cozying up to a murderous dictator while at the same time attacking our friends, attacking Canada as a national security threat, attacking Great Britain, attacking Germany. As Christiane Amanpour said a few hours ago, if any other president did this, there would be an immediate call for a psychiatric evaluation. Not only are Republicans not calling for a psychiatric evaluation, they're really not criticizing this conduct at all. I want to think about why that is. I had many disagreements with Ronald Reagan. No question about it. I didn't like how he treated American workers. We can go on and on about the 1980s. But one thing I always credited Reagan for was his willingness to stand up to the evil empire, to stand up to the Russians, to stand up to then Soviet Union, to say, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Ronald Reagan was right that the totalitarian dictatorship, that the empire, the expanding empire that seeks to control the countries around it and to control the Russians in its midst, that this dangerous evil empire at the time with a KGB, with a guy named Vladimir Putin, you may have heard of it, helping to engineer its most brutal and terrifying arrangements. Ronald Reagan was right to be strongly against totalitarian government, to be strongly against the Soviet Union, as well as countries like North Korea. You know, I used to think Republicans had respect for Ronald Reagan. They talked about him all the time. They named our airport in D.C. after him. I used to think that it had something to do with Reagan's ideology, that they actually cared about democracy. I used to think that Republicans actually wanted to defend the Constitution of the United States, actually believed that we should remain a free republic with a free press. Republicans don't even support a free press anymore. Look at Sinclair Broadcasting, looking to become the Pravda of the United States, the TASS. These are the Russian government-controlled newspapers. Now we have Sinclair Broadcasting, a company that's already controlling 40% in 40% of U.S. media markets and now trying to get to 60%. One media, Fox Sinclair. And I get it. I have friends of mine, people who live in rural areas, who I'm very, very disappointed to say are falling for it. They're believing the propaganda. You know, we shouldn't be surprised so many Russians believe Putin's propaganda when we have so many Americans believing Putin's propaganda in the United States, put forward by its puppet, Donald Trump. I'm sounding the alarm, folks. This whole broadcast is to sound the alarm. We are creeping toward fascism. And I know when I say that, a bunch of people will be like, Mark, you're exaggerating. I mean, please. I mean, Trump's, he's unorganized. He's not that smart. He doesn't really know what he's saying. He sexually assaults women. He cheats on his wife. He attacks our allies and cozies up to our enemies. But fascism in America? Well, perhaps the best description of where we are right now is something called pre-fascism. And an Irish writer has described it very well. Fintan O'Toole wrote about pre-fascism in the Irish Times, and I'm going to be reading a lot of that article today. I think it's important to look at the parallels. You know, I've talked about this on air before. Do you know how to boil a frog? Apparently, and I haven't eaten much frog, but apparently frog is best tasted fresh. You got to kill the frog and then immediately eat it. You don't want to kill the frog in advance and let it sit for a while. I'll leave that to the cooking connoisseurs. But apparently, the best frog is frog that's boiled alive. But it's hard to boil a frog alive. If you have a big pot of boiling water and you're holding the frog and you dump the frog in the water, the frog jumps out. He feels the scalding water. He knows his life is at stake, and he jumps out of the pot, and you got to go catch him, and it's not easy to catch a frog. But I'm told if you put a frog in cold water at the pot, the frog's quite happy to sit in cold water. And then you slowly heat the pot. It gets warmer and warmer and warmer. By the time the frog realizes what is happening, he's cooked. That's what fascism does. That's how you transform a democracy into an authoritarian regime. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen all at once. When it happens all at once, the people rise up to stop it. Ironically, that happened in Ukraine. In Ukraine, about 10, 15 years ago, they fixed the elections. They said people who won, who didn't win, and the people rose up and burned down the parliament. That's why Ukraine is a democracy today. It's one of the reasons why Russia is busy invading Ukraine. They don't want a democratic country on their borders. So you can't do it right away. Hitler didn't do it right away either. Didn't I remind you? Adolf Hitler never won a majority of any German election. Apparently winning about 40% is enough to bring fascism to a country. I want to discuss this in detail, and then specifically why the Republican Party is opening what political scientists call the Overton window, the window of what is possible, what is discussed, what doesn't raise voices, opening it to include open fascism, Nazis in Charlottesville, cozying up and taking orders from the Russian evil empire. When are we going to say to this Republican Party, if you don't put your country first, we're going to make sure that you never serve in office again? That's right. I'm saying the Republican Party is unpatriotic and un-American. And I'll give more examples after the break. If you want to call in, 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. I want to do something that I virtually never do on the air. I want to read at length from someone else's words. Usually I express my own words. But Fintan O'Toole wrote in the Irish Times a piece so perceptive, so on point, so true and scary that I think it's really important that you read it or just listen to me right now. I'm not hearing anyone say this exactly as he's saying it. Listen up, folks. I'm going to read. I admit it. I'm not going to claim these ideas come from me. I'm going to read at length from an article in the Irish Times by columnist Fintan O'Toole. It's entitled, Trial Runs for Fascism Are in Full Flow. Trial Runs for Fascism. The tagline is, Babies in Cages Were No Mistake by Trump, but Test Marketing for Barbarism. Listen closely. I'm going to read the article slowly, and I may repeat parts of it, but I'm going to read it at length. O'Toole writes, to grasp what is going on in the world right now, we need to reflect on two things. One is that we are in a phase of trial runs. The other is that what is being trialed is fascism, a word that should be used carefully, but not shirked when it is so clearly on the horizon. Forget post-fascist. What we are living with is pre-fascism. It's easy to dismiss Donald Trump as an ignoramus, not least because he is. But he has an acute understanding of one thing, test marketing. He created himself in the gossip pages of the New York tabloids, where celebrity is manufactured by planting outrageous stories that you can later confirm or deny, depending on how they go down. And he recreated himself according to reality TV, where the storylines can be adjusted according to the ratings. Put something out there, pull it back, adjust, go again. Fascism does not arise suddenly in an existing democracy. It is not easy to get people to give up their ideas of freedom and civility. You have to do trial runs that, if they are done well, serve two purposes. One, they get people used to something they may initially recoil from. And two, they allow you to refine and calibrate. This is what is happening now, and we would be fools not to see it. Got it? The purpose of trial runs are, one, see what people get used to, see what they recoil from. And two, allow you to refine and calibrate. Back to the article. One of the basic tools of fascism is the rigging of elections. We've seen that trialed in the election of Trump, in the Brexit referendum, and less successfully in the French presidential elections. Another of the basic tools of fascism is the generation of tribal identities, the division of society into mutually exclusive polarities. Sound familiar? Fascism does not need a majority. It typically comes to power with about 40% support and then uses control and intimidation to consolidate that power. Gotta take a break, but we'll be reading more from this article when we come back. It's powerful words for today. And it's important we heed the warning. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I'm doing something I don't often do, which is reading an op-ed by an Irish columnist named Fintan O'Toole. Maybe it takes being somewhat away from America to see it so clearly. He's writing about the pre-fascist condition in which we find ourselves. He points out that fascism does not arise suddenly. It's not easy to get people to give up their ideas of freedom and civility. And that's why they do trial runs. They want to see what we'll accept, what we'll recoil from, and they'll refine it. As I was saying before the break, reading from the article, one of the basic tools of fascism is the rigging of elections and dividing our society into tribal identities. He goes on to say, fascism does not need a majority. It typically comes to power with about 40% support and then uses control and intimidation to consolidate that power. So it doesn't matter if most people hate you, as long as your 40% is fanatically committed. That's been tested out too, he writes. And fascism, of course, needs a propaganda machine so effective that it creates for its followers a universe of, quote, alternative facts, unquote, impervious to unwanted realities. Again, the testing for this is very far advanced. But when you've done all this, and of course, that's all been done so far. When you've done all this, that was my comment, not his. When you've done all this, there is a crucial next step, usually the trickiest of it all. You have to undermine moral boundaries. Got it? Critical to fascism is you have to inure people to the acceptance of acts of extreme cruelty. Like hounds, people have to be blooded. Think about that. Hounds aren't naturally bloody. They're not naturally vicious. You have to bloody them. And people are the same way. Quote, they have to be given the taste for savagery. Fascism does this by building up the sense of threat from a despised outgroup. This allows the members of that group to be dehumanized. Once that has been achieved, you can gradually up the ante, working through the stages from breaking windows to extermination. It's this next step that is being test marketed right now. And by the way, this article was written before the meeting between the leading world fascist, Vladimir Putin, and his acolyte, Donald Trump, today. Before Trump met his boss, this article was written. It is this next step, the step of inuring people to brutality, that is being test marketed right now. It's being done in Italy by the far-right leader and Minister for the Interior, Matteo Salvini. How would it go down if we turn away boatloads of refugees? Let's do a screening of the rough cut of registering all the Roma, which some call gypsies, all the Roma, register them all, and see what buttons the audience will press. And it's being trialed by Donald Trump. Let's see how my fans feel about crying babies in cages. I wonder how it will go down with Rupert Murdoch. There's a picture in the article. It's a picture of children at a tent encampment recently built in Tornillo, Texas. The blooding process has begun within the democratic world, is the caption. To see, the author writes, as most commentary has done, to see the deliberate traumatization of migrant children as a mistake, in quotes, by Trump, is culpable naivete. Those are great words. Culpable naivete. I want you to think about that next time you talk to a Trumpist who's practicing culpable naivete. I would say that's what most of the people in Germany felt like as the Nazis were rising. Culpable naivete. The author writes, it's a trial run, and the trial has been a huge success. Trump's claim last week that immigrants infest, quote-unquote, the U.S., is a test marketing of whether his fans are ready for the next step up in language, which is, of course, vermin, quote-unquote. Those are words, of course, the Nazis used to call German Jews and other Jews vermin. If they're infesting us, they must be pests. And what do you do with vermin? What do you do with pests? You exterminate them. These are my words, not Fintan O'Toole's. Fintan O'Toole writes, the generation of images of toddlers being dragged from their parents is a test of whether those words can be turned into sounds and pictures. It was always an experiment. It ended, but only in part because the results were in. And the results are quite satisfactory. There's good news on two fronts. First, Rupert Murdoch is happy with it. His Fox News mouthpieces outdid themselves in barbaric crassness, making animal noises at the mention of a Down syndrome child, describing crying children as actors. They went the whole swinish hog. Even the brown babies are liars. Those sobs of anguish are typical of the manipulative behavior of these strangers coming to infest us. Should we not fear a race whose very infants can be so devious? Second, the hardcore fans loved it. 58% of Republicans are in favor of this brutality. Think of that next time you talk to a fellow American who says they're a Republican and pretend to be an ordinary political party, pretend to be saying we should be civil. Should you be civil to people who support barbarism? If we learned anything from Adolf Eichmann, it's that it was the civility towards the Nazis that led to their great success. But I digress. 58% of Republicans are in favor of this brutality. Trump's overall approval ratings are up to 42.5%. This is greatly encouraging for the pre-fascist agenda. The blooding process has begun within the democratic world. The muscles that the propaganda machines need for defending the indefensible are being toned up. Millions and millions of Europeans and Americans are learning to think the unthinkable. So what if those black people drown in the sea? So what if those brown toddlers are scarred for life? They have already, in their minds, crossed the boundaries of morality. They are, like Macbeth, yet but young indeed. But the tests will be refined, the results analyzed, the methods perfected, the messages sharpened, and then the deeds can follow. Op-ed by Fintan O'Toole in the Irish Times. My friends, I have studied Germany. I have studied the Holocaust. And I've heard the Germans. I've talked to some of them who were around in the 40s and 50s and 60s and say, we didn't see it coming. We just didn't see it coming. And I told them at the time, I don't believe you. You didn't smell the burning flesh from the death camps. You didn't see your Jewish neighbors being separated and carted away. You know what happened in Washington, D.C. today? Washington, D.C. today, ICE came looking for two undocumented immigrants, couldn't find them, just grabbed nine brown-skinned people and threw them in jail. In Washington, D.C., today, in the nation's capital. And it's not news, because it's common. They've moved on now to separating, to literally pulling babies from the breasts of their mothers while nursing. And I have friends of mine, people I know, people who respect me, saying things like, well, Mark, you know they have to do those DNA tests. How do we know that that 4-year-old and that 6-year-old and that 2-year-old nursing from their mother, how do we know that mother isn't some kind of child trafficker? Really? Really, the child trafficker is nursing the baby because they're doing child porn? Really? Really? Are you going to say that about a nursing white mother? Because she could be a child trafficker too, under that illogic. A friend of mine said that. Someone I know. Someone I've got to talk out of this madness. Now, she's not a resident of this area. She lives in a rural area. She watches Fox News. But this is a woman who I know has compassion. But she treats the brown babies as if they're not human. Now, I admit I'm a bit touchy on the subject because the United States took boatloads of German children in 1939, would not accept the pests, and turned them back into the gas chambers of Germany. So I must be a little sensitive on the point. But today when I saw Donald Trump capitulate to Vladimir Putin, I remember thinking Ronald Reagan is turning over in his grave. This was supposed to be the one thing we could all agree on as Americans. Does he not know how Russia works? Perhaps the only dark humor in the press conference, which is difficult to watch, but you should watch it anyway, was when the American press asked Vladimir Putin whether or not he had any compromising information on Donald Trump. Now, if you don't know anything about Putin and the evil empire and Russia and the Soviet Union, you should know that kompromat is actually a term. It's a word in Russian. Kompromat. What kompromat is, it's spelled with a K, is the way that Russian intelligence uses compromising information to blackmail their opponents, and they do it time and time and time again. When Vladimir Putin was a mere intelligence officer at the KGB, there was, because remember, Russia had this tiny democratic window for about a decade under Yeltsin, there was a prosecutor who refused to be intimidated. And this prosecutor actually went after Russian corruption, actually told the Russian people about mass corruption, and the Russian people were getting really angry at it. That's what happens in a democracy. So Putin directed a nice little kompromat, caught him in bed with his mistress, actually broadcast on Russian television pictures of this man in bed with his mistress. Well, that not only ended this prosecutor's career, it ended anyone who would attack Russia. Anyone who would attack, let me say, because this guy was Russian, anyone who would attack dictatorship. I don't know about you. I've often wondered about Elliot Spitzer. I've talked about this when it happened. Elliot Spitzer saw a prostitute. Okay, a call girl, high-priced call girl. I don't love prostitution, although it appears to have been consensual. But somebody, we don't know who, somebody caught him only because they found that he withdrawn all this money from a bank, and no one can figure out who quite found out that information. And I've often thought, well, Elliot Spitzer was a thorn in the side of powerful interests. And that's how they take him down. By the way, it wasn't just this Russian prosecutor. Kompromat has been used so often by Russian intelligence agencies that, as I said, it has a name. We don't even have a name for this kind of blackmail in the United States. That's what they're good at. And when asked if he had compromising information against Donald Trump, did you see Putin? He laughed. He said, me have compromising information? He said, Donald Trump was just a businessman. Do you think we keep tabs on every businessman in Russia? Well, I happen to know that East Germany kept tabs on 10% of their population, more than 10 million people. Well, I guess at that time, more than 5 million people. Would it be that hard to keep tabs on 500 businessmen? Would it be that hard to install security cameras in the Moscow Ritz-Carlton? They had security cameras installed in this prosecutor's house. Somebody snuck in, burglarized the house, put in the TV cameras in his own residence, and recorded the kompromat. Is it that hard to rig a hotel room to watch a very strange person who enjoys urinating prostitutes? I believe the Christopher Steele memo. But even if that particular form of blackmail isn't there, remember, Donald Trump is someone who American banks refused to lend to because he never paid back the money and was able to, through Deutsche Bank, get ties to Russian financial interests. It's very easy to blackmail Donald Trump. And in return for not releasing the tape, Donald Trump today acquiesced in Syrian genocide. He said, you want to kill 500,000 Syrians? You want to commit a Holocaust in Syria? Why go to the trouble of getting gas chambers? You can just drop barrel bombs. They're a lot bigger than barrels, by the way. They're about the size of Dempsey dumpsters. You can flatten whole neighborhoods. You can call six-year-olds terrorists because they don't want to die. You want to commit genocide? Fine. Just fine. Don't worry. We won't sanction you for succeeding in overturning our elections. We'll encourage you to do it in 2018. I'm going to need your help because the American people, still a majority, don't support me. Donald Trump was asked, Do you now believe the 17 intelligence agencies and the Senate Intelligence Committee and the British intelligence and German intelligence, Canadian intelligence? I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. They have the signatures. They know that the same Russians who tried, who succeeded in influencing American elections, tried in France. The same people who killed, poisoned the English diplomat, the Russian spy that was an English British citizen. These same signatures are all there. No one disputes them. Even Republicans in Congress in private won't dispute it. And Trump disputes it. He says, I don't trust dedicated American law enforcement officials who have sacrificed their lives for this country. I think that all of those tens of thousands of people are traitors. The one person I trust in America, well, it's Vladimir Putin. He's not in America. He just took Putin's word over a bunch of American heroes. You hear that sound? That's the sound of Republicans being silent about it. Don't tell me Republicans are patriots. Patriots defend against America against attack. Patriots don't take the word of our arch enemy and discount the word of thousands of American heroes. I'll be right back right after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've got just a few minutes left. I want to look at this from the Russian perspective in my last couple minutes. The Russians called the summit magnificent, quote-unquote, quote, better than super, unquote. Let's think about why Putin is so happy. He's invaded a country that we promised under treaty we would protect their sovereignty. That's Ukraine. He shot down a civilian airline. That's now been proven. He's poisoned British citizens. And he's actively committing genocide in Syria. His people in Syria, along with Assad, have murdered about 300,000 to 400,000 people, and they're heading for more. He interfered in American elections using espionage in ways that caused his puppet Donald Trump to be there. And I don't think anyone believes Donald Trump would have possibly been elected if it were not for Vladimir Putin's treachery, if it was not for his espionage. So a foreign power used espionage to install an American president. And our president has said that he does not believe American intelligence. He believes Putin, because Putin powerfully denied it. Donald Trump was asked if he would denounce the Russian interference in our elections in 2016. He refused. Trump was asked if he would tell Putin, please, sir, don't do it again. Trump refused, much less did sanctions, which is what a patriotic American president would have done. Think of it from Putin's perspective. His economy is tiny. It's tiny. It is smaller than Spain's, smaller than the Netherlands and Belgium, smaller. It's less than half of California's economy. Smaller than Texas, smaller than New York. We have 10 times the economic power that he has. Italy has more economic power than Russia. This massive country that's, you know, more than twice our size geographically is a paper tiger. Sanctions would truly harm Russia. It basically has one export, which is oil. But how are we going to rally for sanctions when our president wants Russia to interfere again in the 2018 election? To make sure that we, the American people, never take power again. You got to remember, the only thing that keeps America from becoming a totalitarian dictatorship is our power to vote. And if you interfere in our elections and you take away our power to vote, the only thing left is violent revolution, friends. We can't allow that to happen. We must defend the electoral box. We must fight against Vladimir Putin. This is Mark Levine signing off.